Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Forest Arts, New Milton. Please welcome a man who vowed never to return to this venue again, then forgot which venue it was, and only remembered when he got here. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello, New Milton. Lovely to hear. It's great. It's great to be back. It's a lovely venue. I'm sure I've had a good gig here at some point. Welcome. Welcome to Richard Herring's Location Southampton, to all intents and purposes, podcast. To all intents and purposes, that's one word. I was down at Sammy Miller Motorcycle Museum earlier today. It's good. Sammy Miller calls it Rahulastapa, so I don't know if... don't know if that's going to catch on. I actually looked up some reviews of the Sammy Miller motor... because I sure love motorcycling. So obviously I've been down there. I looked up some reviews. Suzanne Hesketh, she went 4 years ago. I didn't go into the great motorbike museum, but just had a coffee and a scone and butter. Was directed to a table and found that it was covered with crumbs. Therefore had to brush detritus away before sitting. The coffee was fine, but the scone was very hot as it had come directly out of the microwave. This meant it had completely lost its texture. Did it come directly from the deep freeze? When I left and commented, to the young lady behind, that she told me that there had never been a complaint before. That's Suzanne Hesketh, 1-star. 1-star for Sammy Miller. David Troll, also gave a 1-star review. I'm not sure this is real. Closed when it said it would be open on a weekend. Not happy. 600 miles round trip. Sammy Miller Museum responded, saying, "If you know the dates, it's worth ringing up if you're going to make a 600." I think David Troll might be a troll. Anyway, it's lovely to be here in New York. When I got here, I've done some nice gigs here, but the gig that I remember here most was in 2002. I think I must have been talking cock. And the next day, I was about to go on holiday to Barbados with my then-girlfriend. like literally the next day, at 6 o'clock the next morning. And we spent most of the time I was here with her on the phone and us arguing because she said she wasn't going to come. And she did come in the end. I wish she hadn't. And it's basically the opening of my book, Can I Have My Ball Back, available in the foyer after the show. You don't get a mention, but it's you can take up what happened. Basically, went to Barbados. My girlfriend had just been proposed to by her ex-boyfriend while I was on the phone to her. She rang him from the hotel room. Then I went into the sea and got knocked over, and my testicle expanded 6 times its normal size. It was a great time. I don't think that's New Milton's fault exactly, but it maybe it's gone now. That's the it's gone. That's the one that's gone. Was that the catalyst? It's 20 years later that it went. I don't think it's the same problem. I should say this is unbelievable. This is sort of almost like a parody. I looked up the news in New Milton and the top headline. I mean, there's some good possible news, but the top headline is fly tipping fears over draconian New Forest wheelie bin fine. That is like a parody local news story headline. And well done for coming down live. And you're very lucky here in New Milton tonight, because I'm trying to get my house ready in case we want to sell it and move. And I'm trying to get rid of a load of shit out of my garage. And you've all been given a free book as a result, because I've got about 500 boxes of those in my garage. So thank you for helping me get rid of those. Plus a free program as well. If you're interested, you can. If you've got any cash on you, which I know is unlikely, there's some purple buckets around. If you want to make a donation to Scope, you can. But thank you for helping me out by emptying some rubbish out of my garage. And so you don't need to give anything. Right, look, we'll crack straight on with our fantastic guest tonight. She's probably best known for her 3 appearances on the Emily Atack show. Yeah, pretty good, huh? That's quite a good credit, actually, for that joke. she didn't have any bad ones. Will you please welcome Ola Labib, ladies and gentlemen? Ola Bib! Ola Labib! I knew it. Come on in, Ola Labib. I said Beeb. I checked it with you. And then
no, that's fine.
Labib,
I get
okay.
Labib.
I know, but I'd like to get it right. And then I get the minute I think about it, I get it wrong. I checked with you.
I'm so used to it getting wrong when it's right. I don't react to it.
Okay, fair enough. Lovely to see you. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. You're local, you know, to all intents and purposes.
Do you know what? If I tell them where I'm from, they're not going to be impressed. Are they not? By calling me a local. Pompey, yeah, exactly. You got it. Pompey. Where are you from? Southampton.
Well, you're a fantastic advert for Southampton, sir. You're really... He's the most eloquent man from Southampton. And there he is. Fantastic. Portsmouth. And now, look, I've been catching up on your... I was hoping you'd wear an incredible jumper, because I've seen you on 2 TV appearances wearing...
It's like, too hot for those jumpers, though. Yeah, I'm really sorry.
Oh, OK, I was looking forward for that. But that is that your gimmick? Is that the way?
No, I was actually going for a Southampton local vibe
okay.
today. A tracksuit.
It's good. Adidas. After dinner, I did a shit. That's how I remember this. Is that how you? All day I dream about sex, or after dinner I did a shit. Those are the two. I used to do a routine about that. So we are going. Like, probably did it here. Didn't go well. I was telling you backstage, there was one gig I did. I think it was Someone Like Sugar, which was a challenging show, where the second half of that show was about 20 minutes long instead of an hour, because I went very fast. But I learned an important lesson that day, which was, A, don't come to New Milton to do comedy, and 2, you have to perform to the audience as if they're enjoying it. You have to give them the proper show. So thank you for the lesson. Anyway, enough about me. Look, it's Portsmouth, and you have come to comedy via being a pharmacist, that you're a pharmacist and turned to comedy.
That's right.
Quite an unusual route.
I don't know if there's any pharmacists here today.
Of course not. They're off their tits at home on all their free drugs. They don't have to come to comedy. Did you go to comedy when you were a pharmacist?
I didn't need comedy. I had all the comedy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a pharmacist before, and it was great.
Yeah.
So great that I changed careers.
Is what prompted you to make? Because there's a quite. I mean, look, comedians come from all different backgrounds. They should do. They did in the old days, right? Like, and you'd go in the 1990s. There'd be someone who worked on the docks. There'd be someone who was a lawyer. There'd be all kinds of different people. And now it's a bit less like that because it's hard to make a living.
Make it into comedy as well.
And make it in. So, you know, it's quite a sidestep from pharmacy. I don't think there are any other pharmacist comedians. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I don't think there is. I think they're quite content with their 9-to-5s and their income. But I don't know. I don't think it was ever me. Like, I grew up in an immigrant background where we were either going to be doctors, pharmacists or engineers. My brother was a doctor, I was a pharmacist, and my other sibling was an engineer. So I always had a passion for writing. I always had a passion for comedy. So I never had the courage to do it. But once my dad got too old to care...
And you're a full-time comedian now. You've actually
full-time,
left.
Yeah.
You left because
I do still work sometimes. Okay. So post-COVID, there's a lot of staff shortages. And
sure.
I'm still quite close because I'm a clinical pharmacist. I know, like, a lot of people... you know, don't care about the difference, but you've got your clinical pharmacist who works in a hospital, and then you've got the bastards who make you wait 45 minutes for one item. So I'm the nice one.
Yeah.
But I'm still quite close to the team, and whenever there's staff shortages, you know, if I'm free, they'll give me a call. They'll be like, oh, can you do a day or two? And I'll still pop in,
yeah.
Try and keep my knowledge refreshed, trying to see what better drugs are out there for medicinal purposes.
Of course. I mean, I'd talk about this in the book, but I very much enjoyed getting a general anaesthetic for when I had my testicle removed. It's one of the best things that's ever happened to me. If I had access to that stuff, not the testicle, the general anaesthetic. Oh, the testicle was all right. I've made a few grand out of it.
It's funny you say that. My brother's a doctor,
yeah.
And I went to get an abscess removed from my arse. Too much information. But so he was like, OK, when you come out of the surgery, they're going to ask you your pain rating. Never give a rating less than 6. So I came out of the operation and a little bit hazy. And they were like, oh, so are you in pain? I was like, They were like, what's your pain rating? I was like, about a 7. And they gave me 0.25 milligrams of
right.
fentanyl.
Yeah.
And... I've been hooked ever since. Yeah. But it's great.
It is good. It is good. So if I had access to that. Also, I like the idea.
Is that why you got me on the podcast?
Yeah. I thought you might have still connections. If I could, you know, just if you could self. I mean, obviously, this is what killed Michael Jackson. But if you could just self. If you could just self-medicate, you could just say, you know, it's 2 weeks to my summer holiday. Just go to sleep for a bit. We you know, it was just be good. My wife wants me to go to the ballet. Yeah, I'll come to the ballet. Bit of morphine to wake me up. Lovely. Anyway, I've never really been into taking drugs, so it was kind of nice to, you know, get them legally. It's good, isn't it? It's nice. Your website, or maybe your agent's website, says you are the first black Sudanese Muslim woman to perform at the O2 Arena.
I hate that description.
Yeah.
Because all that's left is, like, elephant. Or... do you know what I mean? It's, like, the longest list ever. And I was like, just say Sudanese woman.
I mean, Sudanese would surely do it. Sudanese is the bit, right? Because the black women have performed at the...
Yeah, because other black women have. And it's, like, black, Sudanese, woman, Muslim, size 5.5 shoe. You know, it's, like, the criteria is just never-ending. But they should have just stuck at Sudanese women.
They should. But that's... What was the gig for the O2 Arena?
So Mo Gilligan does a black British takeover.
Yeah.
So he gets certain black comedians to perform at the O2, and I was the
good.
One chosen to
is,
do it.
Is it the big room?
15,000 people.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, I know.
How was that?
I think, like, I always cringed when I watched it back because I think my adrenaline... Even though I'm in the medical field, I didn't know that adrenaline can make your eyes pop out. So I think when they watched it back on TV, my brother messaged me and he was like, I never knew you had a thyroid problem.
But it's a really difficult room to... I mean, you know, the new Milton Forest Arts is a very difficult room to play It's a very, very, very difficult
to be honest,
route to play.
I was here last month, and when I got messaged by my agent saying, "Oh, Richard Herring wants you on the podcast," I was like, "Yes, yes, yes!" And it's like New Milton. I was like, "Ugh."
Oh. Yeah, it's your fault. Don't you boo her?
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
Don't you boo her for saying you're bad?
Yeah.
You're not bad. Sometimes it's hard to play. It's a little nice tinsy room, and it's sometimes hard to play that. But like, I imagine, because I have never played more than like 2,000 or 3,000 people, and that's only at charity gigs. Charity gigs. Don't laugh at me, mate. How many people have come to would pay to see you? Do you? Yeah. I think you're overestimated by three there. But, you know, having been there and watched this, because some people are so far away from you, right? So are you able to manage the laughter?
The thing is, you can't even see. And I think, you know, you hear it. Like, that first laugh, it was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
But, can I be honest, I just wanted to get off. Like, eventually, like, you enjoy it and you take it like any other gig. But, no, it was quite bizarre. And do you know what? Because I've always watched people on TV, there's big screens on either side of you. And as I'm performing, you can actually see me trying to watch myself at the same time. And I was like, you need to cut it out. And I was like, how do I look? How do I look? But no, it's an interesting experience. It's an experience I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, maybe you'll get to be there again. Maybe you'll do a whole show there.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. I hope not. No, because I don't think it's the best place to do comedy. I mean, I hope you'll do incredibly well, but for me as an audience member, it feels a bit soulless in place. So when you go to see someone's tour show there, it can feel
100%.
A bit
I love small rooms. I love intimate rooms. I love, like, my favourite part of comedy is talking to the audience. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
You can't talk to anyone at the O2. Number one, they won't hear you. And number two, 14,999 other people won't hear you either. Yeah. But no, I do prefer intimate rooms. And yeah, there is absolutely nothing intimate about... Well, there might be some intimate things going on at the back, but I'm not there to see it.
Yeah, probably. Most probably. There's some great stuff online to give people an idea if they haven't seen Ola. There's some nice clips from various shows you've done. And obviously it is... You're talking about your background, which is, you know... I think it's nice to see that, and I've seen you talk in an interview about how TV executives are trying to sort of push you down a sort of more risque route and want you to, you know, they don't want to hear the true experience of what it is to be you. So in your stand-up, you can give that true experience.
Exactly. Like, I feel a lot of people that haven't heard about me come and watch my gigs, and by the end of it, you hear them muttering, "Oh, I was really hoping she was going to talk about terrorism." And I was like, sorry to disappoint you. there's the news for that. But yeah, like, I think people come in expecting to hear certain things. You know, only yesterday I was talking to a... oh, I shouldn't say. This is going to be aired in the future.
Yeah.
It's not going to be aired tomorrow, so they hear it tomorrow. They were like, yesterday, she was talking to me yesterday. but, like, they were asking me, oh, well, you know, like, we're doing a show about young brides. And I was like, that's fantastic for you. And they were like, oh, do you want to take part? And I was like, well, I would if I was a bride at all. But there's always these assumptions about us that, you know, that we have arranged marriages, that our favourite room in the house is the kitchen. It is, to be honest. Okay, I'm not going to lie, it is. But, like, people all have these kind of, like, stereotypes of us. And the reason, like, one of the big reasons I do comedy is to show people that whatever perception you have about Muslim women, 99% of the time it's not the case. And I just, from my experience being on TV, I feel like they push narratives that people already believe.
Yeah.
Where I'm out here trying to smash those stereotypes. So that's why I went on a rant. I was like DMing every single Guardian, The Sun, Daily Mail. I was like, I need to do this interview. You need to hear about, like, how it actually is in the industry. And someone picked it up.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, you know, it is that weird thing where people feel like, oh, anyone from minority, the TV people will be falling over themselves to, you know, to get representation, which I hope they are. But equally, that is sort of interesting that they're getting it wrong as well.
I think a lot of people are getting it for the wrong reason. I think if you feed into what they want, you'd get, like, a lot further in your career. So I think if I, you know, did a puppet show where I had, like, Bin Laden on my hand and I, like, started making out with him, I genuinely feel like I'll be in Hollywood.
I'm going to try it. I mean, it's basically what I do at night on my Twitch channel, but it's... The internet, I tell you, it hasn't led to being on TV for me, for some reason.
It led to being on a sex offender's list, maybe.
Yeah, been a lot of trouble for me. But, you know, I love the family stuff. I mean, you were born in Portsmouth, right?
Is that yeah, Pompey born
so,
and bred.
So your parents have come... I mean, that's that they'd prefer you were a terrorist here in New Mills.
It sounds like it.
I think what's interesting about your stuff, having taken a dive into it and the other work you've been doing, you know, you're raising awareness about Sudan, and I have to say my awareness of Sudan is very poor. I realised, I kind of thought, oh, I know about Sudan, and then for a while, I was like, I know about Sudan, then I realised that I know about Syria. And I don't know that much about Syria because I thought it was Sudan, so...
That was the same as me. I thought I knew a lot about Southampton, but I was actually reading about Scunthorpe.
Right. There's definitely a cunt in Southampton, I can tell you that, so... Well, he's not in Southampton tonight. He's not in Southampton tonight. He's not in Southampton tonight. He's here. So... But yeah, tell us, because you've been doing, you did a fantastic charity event for
yes,
them.
Yes, a fundraiser. So for those who haven't watched, there is a war going on in Sudan. It's a proxy war. And so the city had 10 million people in it, and now it's down to about 1.5 million. So everybody's displaced, refugees everywhere. And the issue is there's a war going on in Sudan, and... they've closed all the borders, so no countries now, or very difficult to get out.
Yeah.
And it's not just the war that's the issue. Because no one is able to get out, no one is able to get in. So a lot of people that are, for example, insulin dependent, insulin can't get into Sudan. So anyone who's insulin dependent, they're all dying. There's no medication. At the moment, unfortunately, in the whole of Sudan, so it's a population of 54 million people, there's only 6 dialysis beds left. Okay. So basically anyone who's dependent on dialysis, you know, they're basically saying their goodbyes. Anti-rejection medication, they can't get any more. And currently the last we heard are blood thinners. So people with AF, people with history of clots, people with embolisms, atrial fibrillation, all these kind of people who are dependent on these kind of medications aren't getting it. So if the war isn't killing you, lack of medication, lack of healthcare is killing you. So what a lot of people are doing, they're escaping to rural villages that have pharmacies but have very small supplies. So we did a fundraiser that... helped go towards a very small hospital in a village that I'm from, and they built it. You call it a hospital, but when you look at it, it looks like literally a hut you see on a UNICEF advert. But with the funding, they bought a bed to do very minor surgeries. And last week, they did the first surgery where they did an emergency cesarean section on a woman and saved her twins. So. It's beautiful, yeah.
But it's fantastic. It's interesting, though, how little we're aware of that. You know, like, we're aware of some other wars that are going on.
Yeah.
And we're not... And, you know, there's not much awareness in the UK about Sudan, right?
It's because I don't think they're getting a lot of... They're getting all the natural resources they need, but if they cut that off, you'll be hearing a lot about it. But yeah, it's unfortunate. Like, we're trying to raise awareness, we're trying to talk. And, you know, we're not living in a world now where people are dependent on, like, local newspapers. You know, there's Twitter now, you know, there's social media. So, you know, word gets round a lot more. And I think a lot more people are aware. I can probably guarantee that probably 99% of this room knows what's going on in Sudan. I think people are being supportive. We sold out. People made... great donations, and I'm planning to keep doing fundraisers to raise money for what's going on there.
Brilliant. It's really good. I don't know if you want to talk about your husband, but I was interested to see you basically stalked your husband. I thought that was quite...
I think that's a perfect... What's the word?
Segue?
Not even a segue, like really, war husband. I'm like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, my husband, in 2014, I went to a... I don't want anyone to think I'm clinically insane in this room, though.
Yeah, I don't want, they're going to think that after this story as well.
That makes me gangster. the good kind, the good kind. Not the Blue Army kind. In 2014, I went to a film festival in Hackney, and there was an independent movie that someone starred in, this African-American rapper. So he was a rapper and an actor. And, like, I instantly became very obsessed with him. He was African-American. I was like, I'm never going to see him in my life. And so I started stalking him on social media. And in 2016, he released a post on Instagram and said that I'm going to Sudan for a TED Talks, because he does TED Talks as well. So I replied on that image and I was like, oh my God, I'm from Sudan too. And a few days later, he liked the comment.
Right.
So I assumed that meant he liked me too. So I booked a ticket to Sudan.
Wow.
And I booked a ticket to that VIP event. And because even then, Sudan wasn't that safe, so I convinced my family go every year, but I convinced them to go like a month early. And I was like, oh, but the weather's so good now and there's so much going on. So I ended up paying for them all to go to Sudan just so I can go to this event. So I was getting ready one day and my dad was like, where do you think you're going? He doesn't actually have that accent. I need to stop doing that. He sounds exactly like me, but for entertainment purposes, where do you think you're going? And I was like, oh, Dad, I'm going to an event and this and that. And he was like, Sudan isn't safe. You need to take your brother with you. My brother's 8 years old. And he's a cunt. And so I was going to this like TED Talks. Everyone there were like adults, and I had this 8-year-old shit with me. So I paid like an extra $30 to $40 to get backstage passes. And when I got backstage, I was speaking to the producers and this and that. And the amazing thing about, he wasn't my husband at the time, he really encouraged like income going to the country he performs at. So he hired Sudanese producers, Sudanese directors, Sudanese venue, everything like that. So when the producer was talking to me, he was like, oh, your accent, you're not from here. And I was like, yes, I'm from England. And he was like, oh, what do you do? At that point, I wasn't a comedian, but I knew I wanted to do comedy. And I was like, oh, I'm a stand-up comedian. He was like, oh, that's amazing. I'm like, yes, I'm all over TV. And then he was like, oh, I want to do some stuff. And I was like, yeah, I've got fantastic networks with the BBC and this and that. So I was proper like gassing myself up to the producer. And at this point, the rapper comes. Now, I've got this thing that if you ever fangirl or are obsessed with someone, never act like that. Always pretend like you have no idea who they are, because it gains their interest more. So when he came, I was like, oh, nice to meet you. My name's Ola. What's your name? And he's like, oh, my name's Rami. I was like, oh, that's really nice to meet. I feel like I know you from somewhere. And he was like, oh, really? Oh, where do you think you know me from? And I was like, well, we couldn't have gone to the same school because you sound American. And he was like, yeah, I am American. And I was like, oh, I've never been to America. Have you ever been to the UK? So we're there exchanging, like, conversation. And I see my 8-year-old brother looking from him to me, to him, to me. And then eventually he's like, what are you talking about? You're always kissing his pictures on Instagram. So he was just like, ugh. So I could see that he smiled behind his hand. Everybody else was laughing. It was like, so carried on talking to the producer for a while because he wandered off. And the producer was like, oh, we're going for dinner. Would you like to join us? And I was like, yeah, oh my God, of course. But I had to bring my brother with me. So we're having dinner. I was speaking to like different people. I kept trying to aim my conversation at Rami. I didn't think it went well, and I was really disappointed. And that night I went home and I was on the phone to my sister and I was like, I'm really upset, it didn't work. And, you know, I was literally beating myself up for 3 days. So I tried to slide into his DMs. He didn't see it. And I was just like, I've literally spent £1,000 times six to come to Sudan, $170 on an event. And I was like, I didn't see him. Now, I was really tempted to go to one of these, like, juju witch doctors to, like, put a spell. Because they say that, don't they? They put a spell and they make you, like, fall in love with people.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that. I was this tempted. And I was, funnily enough, I was talking to my sister about it. And as I'm having a conversation with my sister, I felt my phone buzz. Ended the conversation, I looked at a message, and it was a message from a number I didn't recognise. And I opened it, and it was like, hi, Ola, how are you? It was really nice to meet you the other day. I hope you don't mind. I took your number from the producer. And it was him.
Wow.
And I married him 4 years later.
Wow. Wow. So stalking works. That
it
is
does,
that
yeah.
is the...
That's pretty much the moral of the story.
That's incredible. Does he? Have you? Oh, you've clearly told him the whole background to it now.
I never did until I did one podcast for Black in Cinema, and I don't even know why I was talking about it. And I thought I knew it was being recorded, but it was put on Twitter, and my God, did it go viral? And. God, the comments. Someone was like, she needs to be sectioned. And some people were like, oh, I wish I had the balls to do that. In your case, one ball to do that. I wish I had this. And like, so I had positive and negative comments about it. Obviously, my husband heard about it and he already knew I was a bit peculiar, you know. But, you know, he laughs about it now. And whenever people ask, he will never respond. He'll be like, ask her how we met, because my version... It's completely different.
I mean, it's, you know, it's very flattering. If a woman spent £6,000 on me, I'd do anything she wanted.
Anything?
I mean, I'm already married, but, you know, my wife's never spent £6,000 on me, so I'm just telling you girls, that's my price. I mean, it's on me, not otherwise. It's not, I'm not saying if you give me £6,000, I'll have sex with you. You've got to spend it on something else. Then I'll have sex with you. No one's having sex with you, mate. So. There's no money. There's not enough money on the Earth, on the planet Earth, for that to happen. Fantastic story, Ola. And I do love that you bring your. I mean, you've said in interviews that your dad, especially, and your brother, like, have sort of introduced you to comedy. But your family's very much involved in your routines, especially your mum, I suppose.
Yeah. So my mum's the only person who doesn't like that.
Really?
I do comedy.
Okay.
I think maybe that's why I still do pharmacy shifts, just so I can tell her, yeah, I'm still a pharmacist. But my dad wasn't happy with it until I gave him, put down the first cheque in front of him, and he was just kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, it's your life, and, you know... but no, my dad's really, really funny, and I always say I hope the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Like when people meet him, after meeting me, they're like, yeah, yeah, I see where you get your sense of humour from. So he's intentionally funny. My mum's one of these people that thinks everything's the devil. Have you seen Waterboy with Adam Sandler?
I've seen all of Adam Sandler's work.
Yeah. So Waterboy, you know, the mum, everything she doesn't like, she'll be like, she is the devil. That is the devil. Yeah, that's kind of my mum, yeah. Yeah, she's kind of that vibe. So she's unintentionally funny. Like, she will say something that is so... Like, I remember, you know, when that really lovely kid, what's his name, on America's Got Talent, he was blind and he's autistic and he plays the piano... And when he got that golden buzzer, we were all celebrating. I was crying. The audience were crying. And my mum was like, why is everybody so happy? Has he memorised the Quran? And I was like, what the hell? What? So you can kind of get the gist of her unique sense of humour. But that, I think that makes her funny. I do like dry sense of humour. I really like dryness, curtness, like... unintentionally funny. So I'd like to think I've got the best of both worlds.
Sure. And you still live next door to your mum?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Wow. How's that work?
I think my silence says it all, doesn't it?
You think you're now earning some TV money, you can move a bit further away next
week? Yeah, I'm, I genuinely, I hope so.
I also, you're bringing back the mother-in-law joke as well, which is that's been gone from the British comedy scene for a while.
Yeah, do you know what? Surprisingly, you know, I'm born and bred in this country. I thought getting amazing grades will get the British on my side. I thought, you know, working for the NHS would get the British on my side. I thought fighting frontline during COVID would get the British on my side. But it seems like hating my mother-in-law is what got the British on my side. Yeah.
You've truly arrived.
Welcome.
Oh, he didn't realise. That's how it was. Yeah, there's a lovely routine where you say, there's a good routine about going to see her when the COVID's hit. But it's not what you're expecting. I don't want to ruin it. Go find it online and go. I'm not going to make you do your materialist.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Pretty good. Let me ask some emergency questions to get us out of this. Well, I won't ask you what's the most... The AI question I've been asking everyone that's been going very well has just been answered, which is, what is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love? So we don't need to ask you that one. I'll ask you one that I've made up first, and then we'll see where we go. Let's say if all the art galleries and museums in the world got together and said, Ola, we love your comedy and we want to give you something in return. You can have anything from any art gallery, any museum. You can even the motorcycle museum in New Milton. what would you like to take as a gift if you are
the hand soaps and the hand lotions in the toilet?
They are nice.
They're actually so nice, and that's what I would do. Or do you know what I would take? I don't know if you saw recently, but there were some activists who smeared red paint on a really old. Did any of you see that?
Yeah, on the.
I want that painting.
You want the painting with the smeared
with
stuff
the on? Smear.
Okay.
I think that would be pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, I think they cleaned it up.
Oh, I don't want it anymore.
But
then.
You could get the painting and then you could smear it yourself.
Oh, I could smear it with something a little bit better.
You could. You
never that know. Sounds awful. Not that.
If you could go into a chrysalis like a caterpillar does and dissolve like a caterpillar does and come out as anything you wanted from the chrysalis, what would you emerge from the chrysalis as? That's a hard question.
I would always like to be a baboon.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can be anything you want. And like, you were so ready for that. And that was like, great, finally I get to let the world know about my wish to be a baboon. I don't have to think about this question. For a second, that's what's good about the question. What is it about the baboon that you...
Because baboons are like proper savage and they will literally... They're merciless animals and I think people really underestimate them. And they hunt in packs and they love their family.
Okay.
And they have fantastic arses, so...
I mean, yeah, if you're another baboon, they have fantastic arses. If you're a human being... Well, you know, this answered one of my many other emergency questions. the emergency questions book, you've got this one for free, but this is the longer version. Will it be available from the shop after the show? Have you ever seen a ghost? I'm interested to hear the answer to this question. I'm going to say you have seen a ghost. Let's see if I'm right.
Have you heard a story or something?
No, I just think, just judging from how crazy you are, I think you've seen I think you've seen a ghost.
So I have a really... I said it in a Speak podcast. I thought that's maybe why you're asking me. This is a true story, though. I swear to God, this is a true story. So, like, I do believe that... Yeah, we're not the only creatures on Earth. I do believe that. I do believe that there's many frequencies in this world and there are beings that live in frequencies that we can't see. So we believe in something similar called jinn, which you translate to a spirit or whatever. And... I was engaged before my husband, and I went to Sudan, and he took me and a few people to a place where they say it's like haunted with spirits. And when I got there, I just got this really horrible vibe, and it was just like, I was like, let's just get out, let's just get out. In Sudan, like, if there's not space in the car, you get in the back of the truck. Like, they have, like, pickup trucks. Mm-hmm. So I was sat in the back of the pickup truck. That sounds so bizarre already. So I sat in the back of the pickup truck with one of my friends and one of my cousins, and I was like, I'm getting like a really, really eerie feeling. And as we're driving, I felt like I saw, well, I thought it was a tumbleweed, but it was really dark in colour. And I was like, did you see that? It just got underneath the, it just came from underneath the car. And they were like, no, we didn't see anything. I was like, did you not just see that massive bit of tumbleweed? And they were like, no, we didn't see no tumbleweed. So I thought that was really, really bizarre. Anyways, I went to sleep. And I dreamt, like, I relived, like, detail to detail, that exact same day. The only difference was that tumbleweed thing, whatever it was that I thought I saw, came into the back of the pickup truck. And I was like, oh, what's that? Get it out, get it out, get it out. And they were like, we can't see anything. And I swear to God, I relived that day exactly how it was, except that that tumbleweed, whatever it was, thing came into the truck, not underneath it. And I was like, that's absolutely bizarre. And it was like the wind was blowing it all the way up to the apartment. And I fell asleep that night, and I had like a sleep terror where I just couldn't move. I was frozen. And I could see my my cousin was sleeping in the same room as me, and I was trying to shout out to her. But I don't know if anybody's had night terrors before, but you try and speak, but you can't say anything. And in Sudan, they like play the azan, the calling for prayer, out loud so everybody can hear it. And I just remember that I can hear it, but it was being hazy, like I couldn't hear it for what it was. And I was like, oh my God, I'm getting punished for smoking weed 2 years ago. God's punishing me for talking to that guy without telling my parents. So I genuinely thought like this was like I'd done something bad, and this tumbleweed thing was like a punishment. So I remember just like reciting Quran in my head slowly. So, and I see my cousin go to the toilet and come back. But eventually I'm just reciting, and I feel I start getting feeling in my feet, in my fingers, and I wake up, and then I wake up my cousin, and I'm like, oh, this is what happened. I was like, did you go to the toilet like early? She was like, yeah, I did. So I could see everything. Does that count as a ghost?
Well, I mean, it's a fucking good story. I mean, I love that sort of stuff. You know, ghost stories usually do revolve around someone being asleep, I have to say. But they genuinely do, because that's what it is. But, like, loads of stuff that happens. I mean, I talked about this quite recently, but, you know, I saw, like, my son came into the room and I reached out to touch him, and he was, like, completely see-through. And everything about it was real, apart from I couldn't touch him. And I was just, you know, I was didn't wake up, but then he was...
But they do say that when you're asleep, especially when you're in REM sleep, your soul floats on the surface of your body. So that's why you shouldn't wake somebody up when they're sleepwalking straight away, because the soul has to zap back into the body. That's what they say. Yeah. So technically...
You have to have a soul for that to work, though. So
yeah, I know.
I'm okay with that.
Oh.
Go on, technically, sorry.
I was going to make a Southampton comment, but I feel like I picked on him too much today.
I think it's all very interesting. And you know, I think that I've had dreams like that where you're waking up in the dream, and then you don't know what's, you know, it's so confusing, because then you don't know. You might still be in that dream. This might be a part of it, and you're about to wake up and go back to the beginning. It's like Groundhog Day, isn't it, what you experience?
Oh,
there.
God. I just wake up, and my alarm goes off, and it's like, you're due to come to Boots Pharmacy at 9 o'clock. God, that's a nightmare, isn't it? Yeah, it's a nightmare.
You never know what's going to happen. So you have, you know, you've been doing bits and pieces of TV, and we mentioned the Emily Atack show.
Yeah, it's very interesting you mentioned that.
Yeah, well,
one,
I got it off IMDb. I haven't seen it. I wouldn't watch
Nor
that.
Nor have I.
I'm not going to watch that. She was a guest on the show before. She's a lovely, lovely young woman doing incredibly well. Is there more stuff in the pipeline? You're obviously working on your own ideas, but maybe not getting anywhere with them.
And I was on House of Games, Richard Osman's House of Games.
Yeah,
last
saw
week.
You tweeting about that.
Yes, yeah. I can't.
You can't say how you did.
No, but I can say that I've got a new suitcase for when I go on holiday.
You got the suitcase. The suitcase is the one.
No, I bought a suitcase from Primark. Got nothing to do with the show.
No, I didn't win the suitcase. I won everything else. But
I was the opposite. I didn't want anything else, yeah.
But my worry with the suitcase would be if someone sees it. If I saw one of those coming around the carousel, I'd absolutely nick that. So you're losing all your stuff because the suitcase is too good. Some suitcases now are so expensive, you kind of think, if I buy that suitcase, someone's just going to take the suitcase. That's like £1,000.
You say that, so I live next door to my mum. I don't know if I told you about that trauma in my life. You know, I don't know why. I'll take it off her, but she also has a spare key. So, you know, you could be doing anything and she was just like wondering, hello, ooh. I'll come back, shall I? Yes, Mum, you can come back. But she came in, she saw the suitcase, and she was like, oh, you've got too many suitcases. I'm like, it's none of your fucking business how many suitcases I have. And she was like, oh, I don't think you have space for it. Get rid of it. And then my younger brother was like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's involvement in your life, and then there's someone monitoring how many suitcases you have in your house. She was like, oh, just get rid of it. Or like, and then my brother was like, oh, Richard Osman suitcase. They can go for like 500 quid on eBay.
At least.
Is that actually true?
I would have thought so. You know, people would pay a lot of money for that stuff. I was going to eBay. I got the, fondue set. I've got the fondue set.
Oh, I really had my eye on that one. Cheese fondue, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I had my eye on that.
But it was just a fondue. It didn't have Richard Osman's... When they sent it to me, it didn't have Richard Osman's face on it. It was just a... Like, to be honest, the first series... I'm a champion of House of Games, just let you know. So the first time I was on, I won quite a few things, and then I got the cup and something else through the post, and they said, where's the other things? And I got the Richard Osman doll, lost in a post. The fondue set turned up, but it wasn't like the proper fondue set. So, and then it was all mysterious. But I got the cup; that's the main thing. I got the Richard Osman doll a second time. So, well, I've won two Richard Osman dolls, but I've only got one.
And did you sell one of them?
No, I said I was going to put it on eBay, and Richard Osman tweeted me, said that is not the done thing. I was going to do it for charity, I think, but Richard Osman hates anyone else having money except him. He wants all the money. He seems very affable, doesn't he? But all he's doing is writing these books, knowing just eventually all the money comes to him.
Let me tell you, no tweet from Richard Osman will stop me selling that suitcase for 500 quid, I'm telling you right now.
But people will, you know, and I've got a Taskmaster trophy.
Oh, we all know Richard.
I've got a champion's Taskmaster trophy, which is taking up a lot of room in my house. So if I'm moving, I'm going to have to get rid of it. So, yeah, I think those things could go for... I think people have sold the... I think people have done charity things and sold the Taskmaster ones. But I think you're looking at thousands rather than 500. I'd say... we could do an auction now.
I bet
the people of New Milton... People have bought these fucking mugs for 150 quid.
Do you know what? He just gave me one. I think I'm just making 650 quid today.
you're laughing. It's all going to be good. I love it. You got into House of Games too late because you're married and Osman's married, but he was using it as a dating service, essentially. So, I'm very upset that...
I'm actually genuinely upset as well.
I was on twice and I didn't get a fucking sniff. I hung around for ages after the first time drinking beer. I was the only one who hung around. Didn't even get a snog off him.
Oh, do you know what? He's a handsome chap and he's really tall. And was I wearing my wedding ring on that day? I don't think. I guess he wasn't into me.
You just forgot. Yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's a lovely guy. Yes, really, really nice.
Something will
guy.
Come out. Something will come out. He's too nice, isn't he? Something will come out. I hope it does. I bet my trophies won't be worth it. Imagine if he comes out and I've got a trophy with his face on it. People coming round.
I've got a fucking suitcase with his face on it.
I mean, it's more Greg Davis, more likely, to be fair. More likely. They'd both be forgiven. Everyone loves them. Let's see. So, I told you backstage sometimes things can get a bit too giddy and we have to cut things out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I definitely think that's one of my
producer might have some problems. Problems with that.
Oh, dear.
I've got a real bad ear thing at the moment and the vibrations have just gone. So just give me a second. Have you got any medicine for that? I've got like a really blocked ear, but now it's just my ears just
I don't know if you're joking or not.
Just suddenly there was a frequency. It happened in the car today as well.
Tinnitus.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. You got anything for that?
Heroin.
Yeah, good. Can have some anaesthetic and have a general anaesthetic to get over that. Now, look, you've never drunk alcohol. This is what I'm quite interested in. You do very funny routines about. You do a very funny routine about basically being abused by. Racially, I suppose, by people in the street.
Yes.
And so you do a... But you make this a very funny routine.
Yeah.
But is it... I'm assuming it's a true story.
It's a true story. And do you know what? People who don't think it's a true story... I so weird. I was speaking to... I came here with one of my friends, Colin. He's Irish. Woo! That's got nothing to do with why I like him. but I was saying that, like, a lot of people don't believe me when I say that. And it was... literally only 2 days ago that I went for a walk on the sea and I was walking home and he was from Pompey. They are trash, mate. I do agree, like, some of the locals are proper trash. And he was telling me, like, oh, go back to where you came from and all. Blah. And I really wanted to say, like, I don't mind racial abuse. I like new spontaneous. Like, someone said something to me, like said something about, like, racial abuse, me comparing me to a mongoose, and I was like, can you say that again? I just need to write it down. But yeah, people don't believe me. But that time I recorded it.
Right.
I recorded him, and I was going to say I tried to hide his face, but I fucking didn't. I proper exposed him on socials. But it was just a point to say that. These things do still happen.
Yeah.
But no, that alcohol story, that was 100% true.
So there's a story where you're when you're younger, right?
I was 12.
Yeah, so...
Year six going to year seven, that a guy poured a can of cider over my head.
Right.
Yeah.
So look, this is like an incredibly traumatic thing to happen.
Yeah.
And you make light of it. So, I think it's a great way of... dealing with it, and I think it also because it's a horrible story. I don't think anyone's thinking, "Oh, she isn't taking this seriously." But you're saying, "Oh, you get to drink cider, and there's no law against
licking it." Yeah, and I love that. I love, like, talking about my experience and watching everybody, like, looking absolutely horrified, and then, like, doing a punchline and everybody, like, laughs, and I'm, like, laughing with them and stuff. But it's just kind of like, I want to make you laugh, but I genuinely want to show you what it's like looking like me growing up in this country. And I think there's a lot of stipulation about certain, like, ethnic groups or immigrants. And look, we've got a racist in the room trying to distract from the topic right now.
I mean, it's just a story about having drink poured over and then they knock their empty drink over.
I think he knocked it over trying to grab it, be like, hey, I'm going to throw one over her. Give her a bit of PTSD. But no, and that's what I like. I like people, like, actually listening. Like, that's why within my comedy, I always tell true, genuine stories of things that happened to me, but then I will lighten it up because it is a comedy show. But yeah. I want them to go home and be like, shit, that actually happened to her. Did that actually happen to her? So it's just like... it's just to give sometimes a rare insight. Like, a lot of people don't tend to come across Muslim women, like, on a day-to-day.
Sure.
And I've been told that, like, oh, I've never, like, met one or never heard the story of one. So I think it's really refreshing that the first time someone has had a interaction, not personal, but, like, seen or whatever, is through me. So, like, you know, just to get a bit of taste of what we're like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I think that's... I think comedy's a great way to represent and show, you know, I think it is a great way to, you know, whichever direction it is and whatever your life is, and it does, you know, it can be all sorts of things. It can be mental health, it can be race, it can be disability, it can be whatever. Whatever's going on in your life, it's just... Because someone's got to sit and for 20 minutes and watch you talking.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very hard to hold on to your prejudices, I think, if someone's up there... You know, showing that they're incorrect. Whereas in the street, if you're unlucky enough to meet someone that crazy and horrible,
yeah,
you know, you can't get that across. But you're absolutely right. I think, you know, obviously there's a lot, a big swathe of the British public who are...
There is. And it's not just like, I think a lot of people, and to a certain extent, I agree. They think that, like, you know, if you're from a certain community, that's all you talk about. But I think the parts that I've loved the most are the things that everybody has in common.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, like, my gender, my race, my religion. There are certain topics that you can talk about that anybody can laugh about. So, for example, mother-in-law, you know, the English men love mother-in-law jokes. Like, they love it. So there's certain things that we have in common, and that's what I love about comedy, that you connect or have things in common with people that you never... Like, when I tell my dating stories, everyone can be like, oh, my God, I've had one of those, regardless of their religion, yeah, or their gender or their background. So it's not, like, my comedy's not just about me being a Sudanese Muslim woman, but it's just about everything. Like, the other day I did a gig about OK, this is really ridiculous. I'm going off on a tangent now. But when I did House of Games... I went back to the hotel, and you know they let us stay in the bougie top floor, the executive suites, don't they, on the 16th floor? And I went into...
Not
the...
me.
What floor did you stay on?
Some rubbish. Travelodge. No, I'm joking. It was a nice hotel.
Oh, I was going to say. Awkward. But, like, I stayed on the executive suites on the 16th floor, and I stayed on the 16th floor. And there was somebody else in the lift with me. There's a reason I'm telling you what floors these people are staying on. It's not because I'm a creep. Well, yeah, I guess I am. But and he was on the fifth floor. So as the lift doors were closing, two men in suits barge in and open the door. One pressed the seventh floor and one pressed the 14th floor. The one who pressed the 14th floor, for absolutely no reason, turns to the rest of us and he went, "Do you know what this means? I've worked hard to stay on the 14th floor." I swear to God.
Yeah.
Now, I'm, like, in my trackies, like, well, a bit like this. And then he went, "Wait a minute, 16th floor?" He turned to the guy in the smart suit and he was like, "Oh, you must be the CEO of the company." And then the guy was like, "No, I'm staying on the fifth floor." And he was like, "Well, who's staying on the 16th floor?" And I've never felt so embarrassed to be doing well. So I literally put my hand up and he looked me up and down and he goes, "What do you do?" And I was like, stand-up comedian. This guy looked fucking livid. He looked livid. But I did this joke in a middle of nowhere place to people that didn't know who I am. But they were, because it's like funny. It doesn't matter what I look like. But there's certain things that people think that the only people that will laugh or go to see me are people that look like me. Mm. But actually, like, I'm very thankful. I have a very diverse audience, and it's
like me. Oh no. I've got every black person in New Milton in this room. Oh, dear. I mean, I think, and what I like about your stuff as well, I mean, this is something like a lot of Christian comedians wouldn't do, or people raised in a Christian family, that you talk about religion in, you're not, and it's the exact same thing with the TV executives. You're not kind of dissing it and you're not going, "Oh, but, you know, I've moved away from that." You're properly a religious person. And
yeah. Yeah, I am. I am. And it just goes to show that, like, you know, these restrictions that people think that we have, but, you know, we're a peaceful people. Well, I do punch some people in the face, but that's got nothing to do with my religion. It's the fact that I'm from Pompey. But no, yeah, I practice as best as I can. I try and stay on the straight and narrow. Does that mean you're going to edit the cunt out?
You said it again. No, I can't take two out. That would be sexist. So it's fine. No, but it's exactly that thing you're talking about. It's about, you know, it's about representing yourself, whoever you are as a comedian. That's what I love about comedians, is everyone is there, and, you know, some comedians aren't telling the truth exactly, or you're telling a story. As we said, you tell a horrible story in a funny way to make a point, but also to make people think about it. And comedy should have this. Should have this wide range of different people, and it did used to, and then it didn't for a good long time. Mm-hmm. Again, I think. Mm-hmm. That it was, you know, there was too many people similar to me, I would say, doing it. But then there was too many laddie sort of white men doing it, you know. So it's terrific that things are changing. I think it does feel like it's not changing that fast, but it does feel.
It does, and I think what surprises a lot of people, you know, when I get asked, oh, what comedians do I watch? I can see the shock on their face where the only comedians I name are white male comedians, and it's like, yeah, like I just find, I know and I get that it is about that and it is about representation, but. I would say don't feel guilty about who you laugh at. Like, I genuinely believe that as a comedian, your aim should be to make everybody laugh, not just, like, specific.
Yeah, and it's there to show other people a different way, you know, a different way of thinking or
exactly.
a different way of living. So,
exactly.
You know, you don't want to just perform to a load of people. You know, if I was just performing to a load of overweight men in their 50s who worked in IT...
I'd call that a cult.
I'd feel bad about it. But, you know, you get. It's interesting to hear someone else's experience, whatever it is. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly.
And even if, you know, my life is very different to your life, and I'm not religious, but I'm still interested in hearing your, you know, and your conflict about it, whether, you know, is being a stand-up comedian, is that against your religion? I mean, there's nothing in the Quran,
no,
I'm presuming, about stand-up comedy being bad.
As a lot of people in here probably think, in the Quran it says you're not allowed a sense of humour. But no, you know, some people, like, have certain views about certain things. But I think, no, it's fine. If anything, I mention this in every single podcast, and I don't know how it, like, veers into it, but the thing that sticks to my mind the most is in 2020, actually, just before COVID, I did a show on CBBC called The Dog Ate My Homework.
Yes,
I don't know if you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. It's a kid show, and after it came out, and, you know, it was on socials, I got a father, actually, slide into my DMs, not in that way, like, just to you know, but he said, I just want to say, we watched the episode that you are, and it was fantastic, and I have an 11-year-old daughter who wore the hijab that got picked on a bit, and she wants to take it off, but after she saw you on TV, she was like, oh, well, other people are going to see it, and they're going to be like, oh, there is another one on TV, so seeing you, like, motivated her to be, like, proud of who she is. Mm-hmm. And even though that's something that's so minute, that happened, like, what, 3 years ago, stuff like that is what keeps me going and, like, really makes me love what I do. Like, right. I enjoy what I do,
yeah.
But knowing that it has, like, oh, this isn't such a tender moment. but, yeah, it really does motivate me to keep going and doing what I'm doing.
Well, you're doing fantastically well, and you're very, very funny, so that's the main thing. And this isn't an easy thing to do, and you've been really good in this. So.
Thank you.
And look, you're sort of working up a new show. Is it called A Walking Hate Crime? Is that the new show?
yeah. And do you know what? It was the way I came with that show when I first started doing comedy. I would always say that I'd be like, yeah, I'm a Muslim. Yeah, I'm a woman. Yeah, I'm black. And I did a gig. It was my regular in Manchester called The Apple and Ape.
Okay.
Jason Cook runs it.
Yes, you know. Jason, yeah.
And sometimes it's very quiet. A lot of the time it's quite quiet. And there was, like, a really drunk... I didn't even think he was paying attention. To be honest, I thought he was dead. And I did that set and I was like, I'm a woman, I'm a Muslim and I'm black. He went, you're a fucking walking hate crime. And I was like, you know what, sir? That's going to be the title of my first show. And lo and behold, like brilliant. 4 years later, it's the name of my show.
Oh, well, that's good. That's fantastic. So we'll be looking out for that. You can find it online.
Yeah, yeah, I'm doing a work in progress. I'm doing it here, there and everywhere. So yeah, it's on my socials. You'll find it.
Fantastic. Look, it's been so lovely to meet you and so lovely to talk to you. Ladies and gentlemen, amazing Ola Labib.
Thank you.
Come back next week. We'll see you next week. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Ola Labib. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing the music. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of the crew at GoFasterStrike.com. Thank you to everyone at Forest Arts as well. Lovely to be back, despite everything that I claim to say. And thank you to Martin Witts from the Leicester Square Theatre for organising all of these gigs. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.